You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
You watch that play. Watch this. Watch this. Watch it. Oh, he got tripped up. But did you see how far he got? The Giants beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl. They were undefeated until that point. Come on. Who loves the Giants? Give it up. Yeah. Yeah. Come on. Yeah, like what? Steelers? Never mind. But how about it? You like being a fan? You like your team? Are you a supporter of them? Do you have the jersey? Do you have the gear? Do you have all the stuff that says, you know what, they're my team. I am their biggest fan. And we're not talking like freaky, like misery, I'm your biggest fan kind of thing. But we're talking about, you know, being a team's biggest fan. And I've been a Giants fan since, like, I don't know, probably sixth grade. This is hot. since about sixth grade. I grew up in Delaware, and we had no home team. We were about 45 minutes, Philly was the north, 45 minutes to the south was Baltimore. At the time when I was growing up, there was no Baltimore team. So you can age me there. There were no Colts and no Ravens yet. And then New York was about two hours north, and D.C. was about 2 hours south. So we pretty much had our pick of who our favorite team would be. And so me and my brothers, they're 4 years younger than me, they're twins. We all kind of chose. My one brother did become an Eagles fan. I was expecting something like that. Are you visiting with us today? Does that mean you won't be back next week? So I chose the Giants, and they've won a number of Super Bowls, and I love to watch the Giants play. And this is the first year I've actually followed the draft and been interested in my team. And I know a lot of you guys have favorite teams, and sometimes they're sports teams, football teams. Sometimes your favorite team might be, baseball. I guess people watch that. And basketball, I don't know, what is the other sport? There's another one. Hockey, right, of course. I do like the Flyers. Then maybe like some of you watch Major League Soccer. Like, okay. Then like Kirk on the plane, we had a free TV preview. And so Kirk chose the golf channel. I'm not really sure why anyone would ever watch golf. But he was watching the golf channel, and there's grass. That guy's walking towards the grass. Oh, now he's on the grass. There, he hit a ball. Okay, that was interesting sport. Oh, wait, now there's more grass, more walking. But anyway, we all like to cheer for our favorite team. And I want you to understand something today. As we're going through this series called Strong, as we're looking at the life of Daniel, this week we're going to look at a very familiar story, but perhaps in a different way. And I want you to get this point. I want you to understand you need to be strong because God is with you even when everyone is against you. I want you guys to understand that God is your biggest fan. God is your biggest fan. Even when everyone else may be against you, God is with you. And we're going to look at that. We're going to talk about that here in a little bit as we go through the book of Daniel. So the house lights are going to come on. If you have your Bible, if you have paper, you can turn to Daniel chapter 6. If you have the YouVersion app, you can just tap that. If you don't have the YouVersion app, it's free. YouVersion.com. You can download it. It's got every translation ever available. It's really good stuff. You can download offline versions as well. But we're going to look at Daniel 6. And excuse me while I take off some layers. By the way, that jersey is Jason Sehorn. Anybody remember who he is? I spent like $1 billion for that jersey because when I was in Dallas, the Giants made it to the Super Bowl, and I was living in Dallas, and I actually sat next to one of the Dallas wide receivers because they weren't in the Super Bowl at a halftime show. But anyway, I went to buy it, and like finding a New York jersey in Dallas is not easy to come by, and we found that one, and it was like 100 and $90 or something like that, crazy amount of money. But that was back when I was young and rich. We're going to look at Daniel chapter 6. And again, this is a very familiar story. This is probably the most familiar story that will be found in the book of Daniel. And if you have grown up in church, you probably have heard it plenty of times. If you have not grown up in church, if you're not even familiar with church, you've probably heard this story or at least heard it mentioned. And this is the classic story of Daniel and the lion's den. And so let's just look at what it says here. And again, with this idea that God is with you even when everyone is against you. And as we read this, I want you to look. We all know the story of the lion's part. And like, oh, wow, God miraculously stepped in. And that's cool. And we'll talk about that. But I want you to just look at what I call the haters. Because Daniel had a whole bunch of guys in his life that were haters. They were not Daniel's number one fan. They were Daniel's public enemy number one. So beginning in verse 1 in Daniel chapter 6, it says, "It pleased Darius." Okay, let's stop there. Darius, we were talking about last week. Be strong. You're not all that. And we talked about how Belshazzar was full of pride and how God wrote on Belshazzar's wall. Did you know that? And apparently Belshazzar didn't get it, so God had to direct message him through Daniel when God wrote on his wall, direct message, Facebook. Yeah, all right. Anyway, but it said that, you know, your pride, this is it. You know, God, this very night, God is going to take the kingdom from you and give it to the Medes and Persians. And so that very night, the Medes and Persians, led by Darius, went in and wiped out what up to that point was Babylon. The empire of Babylon had been ruling the entire known world. And so now Darius is in control. Darius is a completely different empire. These are the Medo-Persian Empire. And so Darius is in control. So everything up until this point has been Babylonians. Now we're Medo-Persian. So Darius appointed 120 satraps. And a satrap is just an Aramaic term for a governor. They're basically someone that ruled a certain area. They ruled throughout the kingdom. And then he put three administrators over them, one of whom was Daniel. So you've got these 120 governors ruling the entire kingdom on behalf. And they report back to, not to the king, but they report to these three leaders. And Daniel was one of these three leaders. So we don't know exactly why Daniel was put in this position. It may have been that the Medo-Persian Empire said, let's keep the leadership there. Maybe he heard the stories about Daniel. Maybe he knew something. And we'll find out later. He definitely knew some of Daniel's story. But he put three guys in charge of the 120 governors of the entire kingdom. And one of these three was Daniel. It says the satraps, these governors, were made accountable to them so that the king might not suffer loss. So their job was to represent the king on behalf, represent the king, to the people. Their job was to, hey, report back here because we want the kingdom to go well. And it says, now Daniel, and we don't know how long this time was, but now Daniel so distinguished himself among the administrators that, and the satraps, by his exceptional qualities, that the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. Now, if you've not been here for this series, this is the second month on it, and you can go to mc3church.org and download the point. But the very, 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 very first week, that was 6 weeks ago, we talked about how Daniel made this one small little choice. And because of that small little choice to do the right thing instead of cutting corners, now here we are. This guy is going to be in charge of the entire kingdom because he chose to do the right thing weeks ago. So anyway, just God is using that. So Daniel was going to be put in charge of everybody. Now come the haters. At this, the administrators and the satraps tried to find grounds for charges against Daniel and his conduct of government affairs. They were not happy. They were, whoa, wait a second, who's this guy? Why does he get to be in charge? That's not fair. Why is he the one that is going to have this position of authority? And so they said, they got together, and we don't know how many of them, probably not all of them, but many of them got together and tried to find grounds for charges against Daniel and his conduct of government affairs. Basically, they said, you know, every leader cheats. Every good governor, every good satrap, they cheat somewhere here and there. And so these guys wanted to find out where it was so they could get him, so they could stick it to him and say, okay, boom, now we've got him. Now we're going to bring him down. It says, but they were unable to do so. They could find no corruption in him because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent. I mean, corruption is a straight up, I'm cheating the system, I know I'm doing it. Negligence is one of those things, well, oh, I forgot, or oh, man, I overslept, or oh, bummer, I didn't do that the right way. They said they couldn't even find that in Daniel. It says, finally, these men said, we will never find any basis for charges against this man, Daniel, unless it has something to do with the law of his God. So, these satraps and administrators, they said they couldn't find any other way. He does everything right. We can't find where he's cheating. But we know that he follows his God. We know the stories of him. We know what he's done. We know he's going to consistently follow God and obey and do the right thing. It says then, going on in verse 6, so these administrators and satraps went as a group to the king and said, may King Darius live forever. And we've heard this phrase a number of times. It means, you know, you're awesome. Don't kill me. May King Darius live forever. The royal administrators, prefects, satraps, advisors, and governors have all agreed. Obviously, not all of them agreed. At the very least, one person didn't agree with this, Daniel. But have all agreed that the king should issue an edict and enforce the decree that anyone who prays to any god or human being during the next 30 days, except to you, your majesty, shall be thrown into the lion's den. So it says that this phrase that they went as a group to the king. It means that they were colluding together. They were cheating. They were coming together to plot against Daniel. So it wasn't like it was just kind of a town hall meeting and everybody's discussing, hey, this would be a good idea. It says that they got together and like, ooh, this is what we'll do. This is how we'll get him. And so they went to the king and said, you know, hey, king, can you issue a decree? And come on. You're the leader. You're the one in authority. And your underlings come to you and say, oh, you're so wonderful. I think we should make a law to make everyone have to worship your wonderfulness because you're so awesome. And so Darius, you know, all right, I'm down with that. You want to have everybody worship me and bow down to me? Okay, sounds good. And it was interesting. They said they want to make this law for 30 days. And I think that says something about Daniel's character because they knew all it would take was 30 days. All it would take was 30 days in their mind to get Daniel caught up in obeying his God in the middle of this law. So they said, we want to make a law. The king should issue an edict and enforce the decree. Anyone who prays to any god or human being, anything else except praying to Darius. We're not even talking about an idol. We're talking about praying to the king. This is very Caesarian. Caesar, the emperors, during that time, or not during this time, but later, definitely felt that they were gods. They were placed in their position, therefore they were gods. And so they said, we want to have anyone pray to you for the next 30 days. And if they don't, they should be thrown into the lion's den. And they said, now, and they're sneaky. They said, now, your majesty, issue the decree. No problem. And put it in writing so that it cannot be altered in accordance with the law of the Medes and Persians, which cannot be repealed. So the Medo-Persian law, the rules of government in the Medo-Persian Empire were a decree could be issued, but if it was in writing, it was not possible to be repealed. It could not be repealed if it was in writing. Once that law was issued, you could not undo it. And so these guys understood that, and as we'll see later, they probably knew that Darius had a soft spot for Daniel. And obviously he wanted to put Daniel in charge, so you know you trust him already. And so it says that they wanted to put it in writing so that it could not be repealed. And so then, so King Darius put the decree in writing. I mean, as far as Darius can see, there's nothing wrong with this. What, you want to pass a law for the next 30 days? Everybody tells me how incredibly awesome I am. Score. Let's do it. And so they passed this law. They put it in writing. Sure, whatever. Fine. Yeah, I don't want to repeal this law. So they put it in writing. It says, now, when Daniel learned, so obviously Daniel was not part of this group. When Daniel learned that the decree had been published, his response wasn't to fight it. His response wasn't to leave. His response wasn't to hide. His response was he went home to his upstairs room where the windows opened toward Jerusalem. And three times a day, he got down on his knees and prayed, giving thanks to his God, just as he had done before. So he did this. He didn't change his routine. The law was changed and said, Daniel, if you do this thing, if you're worshiping anyone else but Darius, you're going to be put to death. The death penalty is imminent for you. And it said that Daniel just continued to do what he had always done. He continued to obey. He continued to follow God, even though the haters were set up. Then the haters went as a group and found Daniel praying. Who would have thought that? Daniel's praying. right? They randomly found him praying and asking God for help. So Daniel was there on his knees. His first response was, God, help me. And he's going to God. He's doing his thing. He's obeying. And these guys went and found him doing this. So they went to the king and spoke to him about his royal decree. And these guys, and I want you to understand something. We talked about how God is with us even when everyone is against us. That's what I want you to understand today. You are probably in a situation, or have been in a situation, that's not far off from this, where there are people that for no reason are trying to find a way to bring you down. For no apparent reason, they want to hate on you. They want to hurt you. And these guys, they were tricky. They were underhanded. They were sneaky. And sometimes doing the right thing, and I'm getting ahead of myself, but sometimes doing the right thing means you don't have a chance to fight back. And so here's Daniel. He says, so they went to the king, the guys did, not Daniel, and spoke to the king about his royal decree. They're like, hey, king, how's it going? Didn't you publish a decree or something that during the next 30 days, anyone who prays to anyone, any God or human being except to you, didn't you say something like that, that if they didn't do that, that they would be thrown into the lion's den? And the king answered, well, yeah, the decree stands in accordance with the law of the Medes and Persians, which cannot be repealed. Of course, I put it in writing. But yeah, what do you, of course I did. Hello, duh, you were the one that brought it to me. And then they said to the king, well, Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah, well, he pays no attention to you, your majesty, or to the decree that you put in writing. He still prays three times a day. And so now these guys know they've got Daniel, and they've got Darius, because Darius can't change his law, because that would be, you know, the rule is bigger than him, because anything in writing cannot be repealed. And then it said, when the king heard this, he was greatly distressed. He was determined to rescue Daniel and made every effort until sundown to save him. So somewhere in there, maybe there are ways that he thought, well, maybe there's a loophole. Maybe I could bring in a lawyer here and we could sort this out. And it said till sundown, because that's typically when the punishment was enacted at sundown, the death penalty there in the lion's den. He tried to find some way. And so Darius likes Daniel. Darius, obviously, because he wanted to put him in charge of his entire kingdom. You don't do that to someone you don't like. And so he was really, he realized that he'd been duped, that Darius was caught in a spot that he couldn't get out of. And so he tries everything he can until sundown to get Daniel out. And then, these guys are, man, they're awful. And we don't know anybody like that. We don't have people that do this to you, to me. It says, then the men went as a group to King Darius and said to him, now, remember, your majesty, that according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, no decree or edict that the king issues can be changed. Just in case you forgot and you were going to try to get out of this, you can't change it, Darius. These guys are ruthless. They are so much haters. They're so upset, so frustrated, so angry with Daniel that just in case in the last 20 minutes or however many hours it was, like, no, don't forget, king. I know you're the king and all, but don't forget the rules that govern your kingdom, that you can't change this rule. And so at sundown, when the time came, these guys were reminded, and they were waiting for blood, bloodthirsty. This is it. Daniel's done. Yes, we got that guy out of there. We don't like him. So the king gave the order, and they brought Daniel and threw him into the lion's den. Seems to indicate that this was some sort of a vertical chamber that he went down into. I don't know, think about like Ra's al Ghul, the prison over in The Dark Knight Rises. You know, a big like hole, probably bigger, not as deep as that because you'd die. But anyway, there's some kind of hole. So it's not like a cave, or it's not like these guys are just hanging out. Like, oh, there's the lions. Go spend some time with them. But it was probably some sort of a pit, a cistern, some sort of unique way that they could push him in. And so here's an interesting thing. They gave the order. They brought Daniel and threw him into the lion's den. Now look at this statement. The NIV does an all right job. It says, the king said to Daniel, may your God, whom you serve continually, rescue you. The more literal translation from the Aramaic is this. Your God, first of all, it says the king consoled Daniel. So Daniel, the guy that is following the Lord God, following the true and living God, doing the right thing, this king from a pagan nation says, Daniel, it's going to be all right, man. Daniel, it's okay. Your God's going to save you. he's going to be, it's going to be all right, Daniel. And so do you understand this? Like, how freaked out, like, Daniel must have been. But the guys around him saying that this king, this pagan king is saying, dude, it's all right, Daniel. God's going to save you. God's going to come through. And that's what it says. It says that it literally means your God, whom you continue to serve, will rescue you. Darius is telling Daniel, it's all right. It's all, God's got this, man. Don't worry. I know, Daniel, I know you had some hard times. Don't worry. God's there. And then it says a stone was brought. I mean, oh, the haters. A stone was brought and placed over the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring. Means there was a wax seal there. He pushed his ring into it because if the seal was broken, it would break. And with the rings of his nobles, so that Daniel's situation might not be changed. Most likely, this is a little bit overkill. Most likely, this was led by these haters that said, we don't want anyone to sneak in the middle of the night. We want to make sure that no one steals the body. We want to make sure there's some way to show that nobody got him out, that Darius didn't provide some sort of like black op rescue plan that brought him out of here. And so they had a stone rolled over and sealed, very similar to Jesus. We want to make sure no one steals the body. Let's put guards at the tomb. And so the situation might be changed. Then the king returned to his palace and spent the night without eating and without any entertainment being brought to him, and he could not sleep. And this word entertainment is, we talked about euphemisms last week. It means girls, music, dancing. I mean, he gave up everything. He gave up. He just didn't eat, didn't sleep, didn't party, which is very traditional for a king to do. He couldn't do any of that because he was so distraught by Daniel and Daniel's predicament. So the evening passes. The cave is sealed. The lions are there. Story's over. The haters thought that. Maybe Darius didn't think that. I think Daniel probably expected it. You know, this is it. I mean, he's had plenty of close calls up till now. Each time willing, we talked about it a couple weeks ago, obedience may cost you something, but disobedience may cost you more. I mean, Daniel was probably at that point. Okay, I'm going to continue to obey God. And if it costs me my life, so be it. I'm going to do the right thing. But at first light of dawn, moving on to verse 19, the king got up and hurried to the lion's den. When he came near the den, and the dawn was, again, this was an overnight thing, so as soon as he possibly could, the king rushed out there, hurried to the lion's den. When he came near the den, he called to Daniel in an anguished voice, Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to rescue you from the lions? And if there was no answer, the story would be over. But Daniel answered, may the king live forever. My God sent his angel and he shut the mouths of the lions. They have not hurt me because I was found innocent in his sight. Nor have I ever done anything wrong, any wrong before you, your majesty. And it's interesting. This is the first time Daniel defended himself. This is the first time Daniel is recorded to have spoken. He continued to obey God, continued to do the right thing, didn't worry about trying to make it all right. He trusted God. And at this point, after the thing's over, he says, look, God didn't kill me because I didn't do anything wrong. King, it's all good between us. I have not done anything wrong against you. The king was overjoyed and gave orders to lift Daniel out of the den. And when Daniel was lifted from the den, no wound was found on him because he had trusted in his God. Sorry, my notes are weird. So, and the interesting thing here is that by removing him, of course, the law said you can't repeal any kind of a decree. But the law doesn't really account for people not dying. The law doesn't really have room for, oh, and if they don't actually die by the death penalty thing, then it's okay. So it was completely legal for him. I mean, he did everything according to the law. He didn't bow down. He got thrown in the lion's den. Didn't say, and he shall die. So he was able to pull him out of the lion's den. He didn't violate the law. And so then, at the king's command, the men who had falsely accused Daniel, and the interesting thing is the Aramaic, and again, this part of, if you weren't here the last few weeks for this series, this part of the Old Testament is written in Aramaic, not in Hebrew, as most of the Old Testament is. It says, at the king's command, the men who had falsely accused Daniel, that word falsely accused literally means had eaten the pieces of Daniel. They had picked at him. They had eaten the pieces of him. So those men were brought in and thrown into the lion's den along with their wives and children. And before they reached the floor of the den, the lions overpowered them and crushed all those bones, all of their bones. So these guys that had eaten the pieces of Daniel were now having their pieces being eaten. And just in case you're like, oh, the lions were sick. That's why they didn't eat Daniel. Oh, they were tired. So they weren't hungry. Just in case you weren't sure, before these people even hit the bottom of the den, they were beaten down by the lions and devoured. And the rule, oftentimes you would see this in ancient punishment. And actually, if you watch that video on North Korea a few weeks ago in your Prime group, oftentimes they would punish to keep someone from rising up. They would not just punish the individual, but their entire family. So that's why their whole family was thrown in there. And that kind of, hey, you know, it's not just going to hurt you. It's going to hurt your kids and your parents. So oftentimes people would obey. Then it says, then King Darius wrote to all the nations a people of every language in all the earth. Because at this point, the Medo-Persian Empire is the largest empire in the known world. They rule it all. Now, they're going to rule for a while until a guy named Alexander comes along. And he was not just good, he was great. And he conquered all of that area and setting the stage for when Jesus would come. So the Medo-Persian Empire was the largest. Babylon was the largest. The Medo-Persian Empire is now bigger, has taken over this area, and Alexander is going to come through and be bigger than that. And eventually the Roman Empire is going to be even larger than that, that's in place during Jesus' time. But that's for another story. So to the known world, he says, may you prosper greatly. Hey, I love y'all. You guys are great. I issue a decree in every part of my kingdom. People must fear and reverence the God of Daniel. Taken king, issuing a decree that everyone in the world must worship the God of Daniel. Why? Because I'm in Voss? No. Because he is the living God and he endures forever. His kingdom will not be destroyed. His dominion will never end. He rescues and he saves. He performs signs and wonders in the heavens and on earth. He has rescued Daniel from the power of the lions. So this king says to everybody, look, guys, you all need to worship the real God. This other junk, I'm not the deal. The real God is the deal. These idols, these things, they're not the thing. The real God, worship him. And he tells everybody that. And then it goes on and says, so Daniel prospered during the reign of Darius and the reign of Cyrus the Persian. And there's some translational issues going on here in this verse. But they often, what most scholars believe is that Daniel and Cyrus are the same person. Just different names for the same person. And what that means is that here you have Daniel obeying God. Daniel obeying God and trusting him and being thrown into the lion's den. So that was such a great thing that Darius is saying, hey, dude, Daniel, it's okay. God's going to rescue you. When he does, Darius issues a decree and says, look, I'm convinced Daniel's God is the real deal. I'm convinced this is for real. Because of Daniel, because of what I've seen here, this is not a joke. And so he issues this decree. And what's really cool is, if you remember the very first week, we talked about how the Israelites, the Jews, were taken into captivity by the Babylonians. This is the guy that lets them go back. He actually says, one of his decrees, if you read the beginning of the book of Ezra chapter 1, he sends a group of people back to Israel, back to Jerusalem, says, look, you guys need to go back there and restore worship to the true and living God. So because of Daniel's obedience, and this is not really where I'm going today, but because of Daniel's obedience, the whole nation was saved. The whole nation got to go back and restore their worship and be placed back in their land because of what they were doing to obey God. So, that's the story. We know the story. Yeah, there's some wind blowing through. We're trying to make it comfortable. Sorry. That's the story. But the point is, be strong. God is with you even when everyone is against you. And in Daniel's life, except for maybe the king, everyone was against him. Everyone was hating on him. Everyone was doing everything they could to bring him down. And I want you to understand, you may be in a situation in your job, in your home, I don't know, in life, where people are hating on you. And maybe it's probably not as serious as they're trying to get you killed, but sometimes it feels that way. Sometimes we wonder, what difference does it make? And I want you to understand that you can be strong. God is with you. God is your biggest fan. Even when things are going rough, even when things are hard, even when you feel like, is there anyone out there? Does anyone care? God says, I'm your biggest fan. You're number one. It's all right. I've got your back. And that's where he was for Daniel. And so I want to look at just a couple of things here about maybe to kind of make this a little more personal, because probably most of you are not in a situation where you were placed as ruler of the entire land, and then a law is passed that if you do not worship the king of your land, you will be killed. That's probably, I could be wrong, but that's probably not your situation. So I don't want you to just say, well, that's not me, so I'm good to go today. But I want to just look at, there were three things, sort of what I'm calling a spectrum of accusation. There's kind of three levels on this spectrum of how these guys accused Daniel. And you might find yourself in one of these or all of these three areas. The first area is what I'm calling just shallow. This is the shallow accusation. And this was purely jealousy because of his position. Had nothing to do with Daniel. It wasn't anything to do with him, really. I mean, obviously he had been good up to that point, but they were upset because he was about to be put in charge of the whole kingdom. And you may find yourself in a similar situation. You might find yourself being accused, being hated on for nothing else than your position. You might be the boss. You might be the CEO. You might be the one that has to enforce the rules. You might be the parent, the mom. But it has nothing to do with really who you are, but you're hated because of your position. And so the thing I want you to understand, I kind of went ahead of myself here, but I want you to understand when it comes to these accusations, that this wasn't because Daniel was a jerk. And you need to understand that. When we talk about God being with us, even when everyone is against us, it wasn't because Daniel was a jerk. Daniel wasn't obnoxious. He wasn't rude to the people around him. He wasn't just being just stupid. He wasn't sinning either. And so I don't want you to walk out of here and say, oh, I can do whatever I want because God's with me. And I know people hate me, but that's because every time I see people, I kick them in the mouth. Like, that's not the situation here. Daniel was being accused for good things. And so that's what I don't want you to miss that. And we sang, it wasn't because of what he was doing. It was because he did what was right. So anyway, back to the shallow. They were jealous because of his position. Many people are upset because of your position. Upset with you because of the position you have. And again, it could be something as quote unquote simple as being a parent. That's hard sometimes. My oldest is starting to get there. Where I'm, oh, your dad, oh, brother, dad's here. You know, that sometimes hard. Like, dude, I poured my life into you. Suck it up and love me. But maybe, again, maybe it's your position. Maybe there's something you do in your job. Maybe it's where you live in your neighborhood. I don't know. But sometimes people, it's shallow. Is it? Yes, absolutely shallow. That people might hate on you just because of the position that you have. And what I want you to remember when it comes to that, as we talked about the last couple of weeks, you know, the only reason you have that position is because God put you there. You need to be strong because you're not all that. And that's what we talked about last week. And we talked about the week before, that God has placed you exactly where you are. So you need to understand that. You need to stay humble and say, yeah, I'm in this position. And the only reason I'm here is because God has put me here. But you might find yourself being accused, being hated on simply because of your position. And I can't say that that's a great reason. I can just say that it's unfortunately shallow. And you might find yourself there. I mean, everybody wants to stick it to the man. And you might be the man or the woman in that particular position. But so just kind of as you consider this idea of God being with you, you know, maybe you find yourself in this spot where just because of your position, people hate you. And it might be hard. But understand that God is your biggest fan. Be strong. God is with you. The second thing is a little moving on from the shallow end to what's a little bit more normal. And I would call this frustration because of integrity. People don't like it when people do things the right way. In Daniel's situation, these guys were upset because he had the position. And then they said, well, we don't like that. So let's find a way that he was cheating. I'm sure he was cheating. Everybody cheats. Everybody cuts corners. But Daniel didn't. And so they were frustrated because he was doing the right thing. And you're going to find times in your life where people are going to hate on you because you're doing the right thing. And I'm just talking about normal goodness, normal being, doing the right thing, normal justice type things. They couldn't find anything wrong. So they were frustrated with him. They were upset because he didn't cheat like everybody else did. And you might find yourself in that similar position That's the real predicament. The people don't like you. The only reason they don't like you, the only reason they want you to go down is because you're good. And I don't mean because you have goodness inherent, but because you do good things. Because you do the right things. Because you don't cheat. And I just want you to understand that it's completely normal. If you find yourself being hated on for doing the right thing, there's a few guys that have had this happen before. Noah, Joseph, Moses, David, Jeremiah, Paul, and what's that other guy's name? Jesus, yeah, Jesus. That was the other guy that was hated for doing the right thing. Yeah, you might find yourself in with those people. And people are bothered. We're in a world of cutting corners. We're in a world of cheating. And people are bothered when you do the right thing. And so here's my question. While I want you to understand that God is with you, if people are hating on you for your integrity, are people hating on you for your integrity? Or do you just blend right in? Just something to question. Are you known for your integrity, for doing what is right in your job or in your school or in your home, when you're driving, whatever? Do people know you for that, or do you like, oh, no, we don't hate on him because he's just like us? Just something to consider. But that was the difference here. These guys were moving on. It was a little, not quite as shallow. They were upset with Daniel because of him doing the right thing. And then what I would call the deepest level, as you look at this, the deepest level of accusation, and this is anger because of obedience. They finally got to the point that said, the only way we can bring Daniel down, the only way we can kill him, is because of him following God and doing what God has called him to do. It wasn't just about him doing the right thing. It was about him going beyond and obeying God. Even though the law said, hey, you're going to die if you do it. He was willing to do what God told him to do, even though it would cost him his life. And that's hard. That's a big deal. And maybe you're being hated on. Maybe people are trying to bring you down because you're doing something that God has called you to do that people don't like. Now, maybe something as simple as being here today has caused some tension in your family. Maybe, I don't know, maybe there's something you've had to do and you've given up something financially for the sake of someone else. And you find yourself being hated on because of doing the right thing. And this is hard stuff. Because this is what God wants you to do. And sometimes we must be obedient rather than worry about what other people think. And that doesn't make it easy. In Acts 4, 18 to 22, you have Peter and a bunch of the early followers of Jesus were telling the world about Jesus. They were going around saying, Jesus is the real deal. Jesus is the man. And the religious leaders grabbed them, pulled them aside, imprisoned them, and said, look, you guys need to stop telling people about this Jesus. You're messing up our system. Because their Jewish system of rules and laws was good to them. So you're messing up our system. Stop doing this. And Peter's response was, we must obey God rather than men. We must obey God. You guys decide, is it better for me to obey God or you human people? And sometimes we are in that situation where we're being hated on for following God, for obeying, for doing the right thing. And sometimes maybe we're not. Are you being hated? You know, do people say, wow, there's a person that obeys God. Wow, there's a person that made a hard choice, a difficult decision, followed through with something in a challenging way because of obedience to God. And when you do that, there's going to be people that are going to hate on you. There's going to be people that say, no, you don't want to do that. Think about, you don't want to give up that job. Think about your money. Think about your kids. No, you don't want to go there. It's dangerous. You could be beheaded. You don't want, like, we have all these things, and people are ready to say, no, don't do that. Don't obey God. And you might find yourself alone because you're doing, and again, we're not talking about sin here. We're not talking about you being rude or obnoxious or a butthead. We're talking about saying, this is what God has called me to do. I know he's called me to do it. And you're obeying him, and people might hate on you, and you might feel you're all alone. But understand that God is with you, even when everyone is against you. God is your number one fan. God is rooting for you. God's saying, go for it. Woohoo! You can do it. That's where God is when it comes to obeying him, when it comes to following him. And so I don't know where you are. And shallow, sometimes people hate on you for shallow reasons, but those shallow reasons hurt. And sometimes these deep reasons, they hurt. And so I just want you to understand this, that you need to be strong because God is with you even when everyone is against you. God is with you even when everyone is against you. So let me throw out three things. Just to remember, if you find yourself being hated on, if you find yourself in the bottom of the pit waiting for the lions to pounce, if you find yourself being decreed to the point where you have to follow God and perhaps your own personal sacrifice, there's three things that I want you to understand when it comes to God being your fan. The first thing is that when everyone is against us, God offers us guidance. The first thing to understand is that when everyone is against you, God offers us guidance. Proverbs 3, 5 to 6, it's a pretty familiar passage if you grew up in church world. And it says this: trust in the Lord with all your heart and do not depend on your own understanding. Seek His will in all you do. So obey God. That's the first three verses. And He will show you which path to take. And we're going to talk more about this next week, so I don't want to get into it too much. But just understand that if you find yourself alone and feeling like everyone is against me, God's going to show you the way. Just trust Him. Continue to trust Him. Continue to obey Him. Continue to follow Him. He will give you guidance. He will show you the path to take. He will show you the way to go. The second thing is that when everyone's against you, God offers us, and this is kind of cool, God offers us His experience. And what I mean by this is that you're not alone in this. The Son of God, God in the flesh, that guy, what was His name, Jesus? He went through this too. He says, you're not alone. In John 15, 18, Jesus said this. He said, if the world hates you, hey, keep in mind, it hated me first. You've got a God saying, you're number one. You can do this. And He says, because I've been there. I know what it's like at the bottom of the pit. I know what it feels like when everyone's hating on you. And I kept at it. And it's hard. But keep in mind, if people are hating you, they hated me first. And the only reason they hate you is because of me. So it's not really your fault. So understand that when you feel alone, when you feel like everyone's against you, you've got a God. You're not just worshiping some aloof God. We don't just sing about holy is the lamb that was slain. No, those are nice words. You're singing about a God that lived on the earth and died for you and says, I've been there. And that's either sympathy or empathy. I still don't know which one that is. But it means that God's been through that. The Son of God has been there with you. And the third thing that I want you to understand, and this is pretty huge, is that when everyone's against you, God offers us presence. God offers us His presence. We spent this back in, what was it, April? No, we're in May now. So that was in March. We did a series called Dwell, and we talked about the tabernacle and how God dwelled among His people. And how Jesus then became flesh and tabernacled among His people. And Jesus tells us in this great commission, is what we learn in churches. This is about evangelism. It's about telling people about Jesus. Jesus says, you know, go into all the world, make disciples. And that's what the C3 process is all about, making disciples. Baptizing in the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I've commanded them. And then He ends it with this. And He says, be sure of this. Telling all of His followers, His disciples, He says, be sure of this. I am with you always to the very end of the age. You're not alone. God Himself is with you. As a follower of Jesus, we have the Holy Spirit of God living in us. When everyone is against you, God's your number one fan. Don't quit. Don't give up. Don't change just to fit the crowd. You're not alone. God is with you. And all I can offer you is, all I can offer you is the God of the universe is with you. Sorry. I wish I could do more. But at the same time, I understand that when we're through these dark times, when we're in the bottom of the pit, when we're getting ready to be thrown in, it's hard to remember that. And I just want to remind you now that God is with you. You're not alone. What you're going through, you're not alone. Be strong. Be strong. God is with you, even when everyone else is against you. Would you pray with me? God, thank you so much. Thank you right now that I and the people in this room are talking to the God of the universe. That right now, we are talking to you because you are with us. And I thank you that you will never leave us. You'll never forsake us. That you are with us always to the end of the age. And that you've been through what we're going through. And that you promise to guide us if we continue to obey you. And so I pray, Father, for the people in this room. Sometimes life is hard. For many people today, Mother's Day is hard. We have struggles with our jobs. We feel like we're not getting anywhere. There's coworkers that just won't leave us alone. We have issues in our families that we just feel like we're done. We're spent. And God, I pray that you would help each person in this room, wherever they find themselves on that spectrum of being hated, of feeling alone. I pray that you would remind them, God, help them to be strong because you are with us, even when everyone was against us. We thank you for Daniel and his example and God, what you did through him. And there wasn't any worse that could get for him, but he continued to obey you and continued to remain strong. And I pray that you would help us to do that as we live our lives. Thank you, God, for the moms that are here in this room. Thank you for the moms that have birthed us, for the adoptive moms many of us have that have raised us, for the stepmoms, for the grandmoms, for the aunts, for the people that have poured into our lives and for giving them to us, God. And I just pray today that as we leave this room, you would help us to be strong. Because you are with us. The presence of the God of the universe is with us, is with me. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.